First, the shopping mall started off as a uniquely American institution. You might have spent some of your childhood there. Cue a 1980s mall commercial.
Bayshore Mall has something special in your mailbox. 20% off coupons that you can redeem at any participating store Thursday through Sunday. The beat goes on with savings, fashion, food, and fun. Catch the beat,
it's a mall commercial from back in 1988. In some ways, the heyday of shopping malls. But malls faded in popularity over the years. There were too many of them. Big box stores added competition. Then internet shopping and the pandemic came along. But hold on. Our next guest says malls aren't dead. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Did you spend a lot of time in malls maybe during your childhood? Do you shop in them a lot in your adulthood? Do you have a story about a memorable time you had shopping or working at a mall? Is there a future for them? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Alexandra Lang is a design critic. Her writing has been published in places including Harvard Design Magazine, The New York Times, and The Atlantic. Her new book is called Meet Me by the Fountain, An Inside History of the Mall. Alexandra, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I love that ad.
Now, you and I are roughly the same age. I won't reveal it to people, but I was a kid. I was a teenager in an era where going to the mall was just a thing you would do, not to buy anything necessarily. It was an attraction, and that was part of your growing up too.
Yeah, definitely. I grew up in North Carolina, and what did you do when you wanted to meet your friends on a weekend afternoon? You went to the mall. Like, maybe you went to the movies, maybe you went to the food court, maybe you just walked around and looked at things. But that was the place to go. And I think that was true for basically millions of kids, especially those who grew up in the 80s and 90s.
Now, your book isn't just a trip through nostalgia, though. What led you to decide to study malls from, a design critic standpoint?
Well, I had read a lot of the stories about the death of the mall, but at the same time, I read other stories talking about, pretty famous architects like Renzo Piano designing new retail structures that seemed to me to be a mall. They weren't calling them malls, but they were definitely malls. And I wanted to delve into the history of shopping centers and malls and figure out why they were so popular and what was still good about them.
Now, there's one key figure, an immigrant design person responsible for the mall in its modern form, Victor Gruen. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right. Can you tell us a bit about his role in the creation of what we think of as the mall?
Sure. It's Victor Gruen. That's right. He is really the father of the shopping mall. He was a Jewish emigre from Vienna. He fled the Nazis in 1938 and came to America. And he was somebody who started designing department stores and quickly realized that the new suburbs needed a place for people to go. They needed a new downtown. And the way that they were being built, there was no main street. And he thought, what if we can get the department store owners to move from downtown to these suburban areas and build a whole main street around their store? And the first shopping mall was built in Edina, Minnesota in 1956, and that's Southdale. And it basically has this central court that has climate control, it has daylighting, and it has a little Viennese-style cafe off to the side because he thought that's what Americans needed.
The idea was that, hey, this is in some ways a public space, but protected from the weather, accessible to people in this area. Talk about Victor Gruen's vision for what he hoped the mall would be.
Yeah, I mean, Southdale, some of the initial advertising trumpeted the fact that there would be 365 shopping days a year, because you know this in Wisconsin too. In the winter, nobody wants to go shopping outdoors. So the mall provided indoor year-round shopping, and it was also supposed to serve as kind of a community gathering space. Those initial malls especially often had sculpture, they had a carousel for the kids, they had cafes, and they basically had stores that would serve all of the needs of what was often the mother living in the suburbs who had to do a bunch of errands with kids tagging along. But he also felt like they should have a public role. Some of those early models had community rooms or churches, and people, in his view, just needed a place to come together.
You write that part of the appeal of malls in these suburban areas was it was a place where you wouldn't run into poor people on the streets. You wouldn't worry about the crime, say, in a downtown area. And in many suburbs with restrictive zoning laws, you wouldn't run into black people at a mall. This was not all a happy thing in some ways.
Right. That is definitely true. You know, malls are in some ways a manifestation of white flight from central cities. And many of the neighborhoods around the malls would have restrictions on who could buy the housing. So even if the malls weren't specifically designated as a white space, they would have been a white space because only white people lived around them. And because they are, in fact, private property, they could be regulated, maintained, et cetera, to kind of a higher standard and a more restricted standard than you would get in downtowns, which are actually public space.
Talking to Alexandra Lang about her new book, Meet Me by the Fountain, An Inside History of the Mall. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have fond or less than fond memories of spending time at a mall? Did you go to them a lot in their heyday? Do you still go to your local community shopping mall? If not, what replaced it to meet your shopping needs? Do you miss anything about having a place with a, I don't know, big fountain in it and all the mall-like amenities? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Alexandra, malls were super successful, right, for a long time. Can you talk about malls at their peak?
Malls at their peak, they were building basically hundreds of malls per year because every suburb needed one. And during the time when they were at their peak, people did a lot of really kind of fun and innovative things with them. I think the innovation that most people are familiar with is the Mall of America, which put an entire roller coaster in the center of the mall, you know, no fountain, but a roller coaster. So there was this sense that malls had to kind of top themselves and that they were also competing in the fashion marketplace for the newer, better, you know, kind of more technologically advanced mall. And that's a really fun period to study, basically, you know, leading through the 80s and into the early 90s.
I listed a few causes of a decline for malls, and we've seen that in a lot of places around the country. One was, you write, they just built a lot of malls, maybe too many malls. How did we end up with a glut?
Well, the short answer to that is capitalism. Basically, mall developers saw where a mall had been successful but was maybe getting a little tired looking and just built a new mall 10 miles away in a fresher suburb and sucked all of the business from that older mall to the newer mall rather than building one in a place that hadn't had a mall. So then you get two malls, one's doing well, one's on a slow decline, and may eventually die. So I think that over competition and kind of lack of imagination and where to open new malls really doomed a lot of them.
Talking to Alexandra Lang, design critic. Her new book is Meet Me by the Fountain, An Inside History of the Mall. We're looking at malls past, present, and future. And yes, she says there is a future. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think is in store for the future of American shopping malls? Maybe they look different now, laid out differently. We'll get into that in just a bit. Are you now or have you ever been a mall shopper or have you worked at malls? Do you have an experience you would like to share? Do you have a question about how they've changed over the years? And hey, do you have a mall that is unused or disused in your community? What would you like to see happen to it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about shopping malls, their history, their design, their future. Alexandra Lang is with us, design critic. Her new book is called Meet Me by the Fountain, An Inside History of the Mall. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you go to malls in your heyday? Did you make plans to meet someone by the fountain or the food court or you name it? Are malls part of the distant past for you or part of the present in how and where you shop? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Alexandra, one key point I take away from your book is, yeah, we might keep saying malls are dead or dying. Malls are not dead, and they're not necessarily dying. Why? Make the case for us.
Well, some malls are dying, but even the most doomsday predictions by retail experts still indicate that there are probably going to be 700 to 800 healthy malls in the U.S., which still seems like a heck of a to me. Those malls tend to be like newer malls, malls with higher end department stores, and those have really held on to their customer base and are still offering something that people want. I think the dead mall narrative was really spurred by a lot of actually often very beautiful photography of dead malls that went viral, and people just kind of extrapolated from that and were like, okay, malls are over.
We heard from Ravana on the Ideas Network Facebook page, who says they always hated the mall, but sometimes when they went to their local one, there was a survey company in it. Ravana learned to spot the surveyors to participate in surveys, be sure to walk by them so they could take a survey and get cash or coupons for the food court. Says made having to be in the mall a little better. I did a soda challenge at a mall one time. I intentionally picked the wrong one and I didn't get the free soda. I was just being ornery. But Alexandra, you know, that reminds me, like, the question of whether a mall is a public space. A survey company might set up shop there. Can protesters set up shop at a mall? Is this really a public sphere we can go into and interact with people? Has been a question over the years.
It has. And that the answer to that question actually varies state by state. The first legal case around whether a mall was public space and could be used for public protest actually occurred in 1968. And Thurgood Marshall wrote the opinion, the majority opinion, and said that malls should be available for protest because they were becoming the new main street. Now, over the years, that right has been whittled away, and now it really depends where you're located whether or not you can protest at the mall.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. KB is with us in La Crosse. KB, hello.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
What did you want to tell us about?
Hey, I just wanted to mention I, in a previous life, worked in Rosedale Mall up in Roseville, Minnesota, and it was a blast. I actually love that job because of the network of other employees and other shops. It got to the point where we'd all make friends with each other and stuff and offer each other our employee discounts, kind of like a whole barter system kind of thing. You know, I worked in a record shop and CDs and video games and stuff, and, you know, there'd be the girl down the hall who worked in a hair salon, and she'd do my hair, and I'd give her my employee discount for her CD that she wanted, you know, so David Bowie specifically, you know, kind of thing. You know, it's kind of cool.
KB, thanks a lot for the call at 800-642-1234. I worked at a mall for some years, and I got pretty good deals on some Sbarro's breadsticks, not going to lie. Alexander, the people who work at malls, a community, KB says. I don't know if you'd looked at the mall workers that much, but it's a unique kind of place to work.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories like that, often from people that were hanging out at malls anyway as teens and then thought, hey, I should get a job here too. But I think that's a great kind of tribute to the fact that the mall can be a community space. Yes, we tend to focus more on the consumers, but having all of those businesses in proximity is part of what makes malls great. And the workers are really just taking advantage of the same kind of proximities as customers are.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Alexandra Lang. Her new book is called Meet Me by the Fountain, An Inside History of the Mall. Alexander, maybe my favorite chapter was your last one. I think of malls as American, and not so much anymore. You surveyed some malls around the world, and they're kind of taking us to mall school.
They are. One of my favorite examples in that chapter is from the Philippines, where the malls are all basically the same size as the Mall of America. And they are very often on light rail lines. They will have government offices in them. They're basically like satellite cities all under one roof. And I think, especially if we're going to try to densify cities and inner ring suburbs, thinking of the mall as something that can truly be an urban hub is a great way to go. But it would require us sort of like opening our eyes to what's happening elsewhere in the world with malls.
And one interesting bit of motivation, I think it was Chile, you gave an example where if I own a mall, I can get a pretty good tax break if I host a museum or a library or other public institution.
Exactly. That is true in Chile. And actually, it's also true in the U.S. I got a message from a public library in Maryland that is located in the mall. They started as just a kind of like check-in, check-out mini branch, and the mall said, oh, you're doing so well, like, let's give you 30,000 square feet. And now it's one of the most popular branches in the county.
I want to look at some of the ways malls or the spaces they are on are changing. I've seen a lot of malls around the state here go from the all indoor enclosed to doing some redesign and, you know, having an outdoor street and you enter the buildings from outside. So outdoorizing these indoor malls. Is that a trend everywhere in the country?
That is a trend everywhere in the country. It's generally, you know, more popular in the South and in California, where the weather is nicer year-round. But that is definitely a trend. I also think, you know, something that's really important is there's been the demise of a lot of department stores. And so as malls try to reposition themselves, coming up with other uses for those department store spaces, things that people really do want to leave their house for, is super important. And some of the most important things in those categories that I've seen are food, you know, food halls, food marketplaces, and also kind of family fun like trampoline parks.
And another change that seems to be going on, well, grocery stores are part of malls more and more now, you write, but also malls, including on their grounds, residential stuff, maybe upstairs or maybe on the outskirts.
Yeah, a lot of people are suddenly realizing that malls have way too much parking. And what can we do with especially the parking lots around the edges of the malls where maybe we want to start making nicer, more pedestrian streets? And those are really ripe for building housing, especially kind of townhouses, low-rise apartment buildings in places that really need to build more residential.
We heard from Charlie in Eau Claire who couldn't stay on the line. Charlie grew up in the 70s. She says the name of the book is fantastic. Threw her right back into her childhood. Charlie remembers going to Hot Sam's and Orange Julius to eat with friends. Yeah, you when you started thinking, should I write a book about malls? People were very quick to share their mall memories with you, right?
Yeah, and as an architecture critic, like, I want to write about things, buildings, designs that people have feelings about. And so malls just felt like this great untapped resource that, oh, people love this architecture, even if they've never thought about it as architecture.
You mentioned untapped resources, and you write about malls that are more or less completely defunct, actually being potentially great opportunities to use that land, but in different ways. What kind of things are you seeing?
Well, one of my favorite examples is Austin Community College, their Highland campus in Texas, where an entire community college moved into a defunct mall, and they have built new residential housing in the parking lots. And they actually now have enough space so that they've invited the local public TV station to have their offices, you know, in one of the former department stores. And so it's becoming this whole mixed-use community and a center for students when before it was just this big dead mall.
What are you watching for? Now we've, I mentioned the glut of malls. There's also big box stores challenging them, internet shopping, the pandemic, and more. What are some of the big trends you're watching for now in 2022 when it comes to the malls you've been researching for so long?
I think the major trend is that kind of mixed-use redevelopment, saying, okay, like, we still want to have retail here. People, you know where it is, know what to shop for here. But what else can we do with the parking lot? What other kinds of things can we invite into this space, whether those are medical facilities or churches or kind of the upscale supermarkets that you can eat in? that will really bring people out of their houses and allow them to kind of get together in an air-conditioned space, a space with a fountain, a space maybe with indoor plants.
And one thing that struck me, it seems like nowadays mall, for people who are building malls, maybe a four-letter word. It seems like some of the people you want to talk to want to call their thing anything but mall.
That is so true. Let's see, what did they try to tell me? They called it a vertical retail center. They called it like a piazza. They called it a marketplace. But I just felt like people know what a mall is. Like when I say mall, you know what I'm talking about. And if I say vertical retail center, it's like, what?
Alexandra, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Alexandra Lang is a design critic. She joins us today for a look at her new book. It's called Meet Me by the Fountain, An Inside History of the Mall. Still time for you to share your mall memories, if any, whether they go back 3 decades or 3 minutes. Let us know what you think about malls, past, present, and future. Let us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. And hey, if you have a building that we would typically have called a mall in years past that's getting used differently now, where some of the space is getting used in a different way than straight up retail, love to hear about that too. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org.